Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
It is Washington Wednesday, and that means we got to look at the Washington Huskies. Plenty of news here, by the way. So joining us to help break it all down is Mike Varell of the Seattle Times on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Doing well. How are you guys?
Well, a little under the weather, but it has nothing to do with the Apple Cup, nothing to do with Monday Night Football, I don't think, but maybe it does. I don't know. But there was some, I'm going to call it good news, at least news for the Huskies, and that was they have a new head coach. For someone who knows absolutely nothing about Kalen, can you tell them what they need to know?
Yeah, sure. UW has finalized the hire of Kalen DeBoer, who, you know, comes to UW from Fresno State, where he had been for two seasons. He's a guy who had really built a reputation on offensive football, on basically bringing offenses that have scored and have revitalized programs pretty much everywhere he's went. The question coming into this situation is, can he do that at the Power 5 level? In 2019, he took over Indiana's offense as their offensive coordinator, and they made massive strides. He's never been a Power 5 head coach. What's that, you know, translation going to be like? How is he going to recruit against the Oregons and the USCs of the world? Those are kind of the questions, but I feel like he came in yesterday in his introductory press conference and was very impressive and said the kind of things that UW fans want to hear. And now it's just going to be interesting to see how his plan goes into motion and how he can really translate his vision and if that offense can be everything it has been with previous programs at UW.
Now, Mike, when you were at the press conference and you were listening to DeBoer speak, what were some of the main points that he hit on? What were some focal points that he wanted Husky Nation to know right off the bat?
I think the emphasis there was on recruiting, because obviously it's no secret that UW has fallen behind there in the last 2 years under Jimmy Lake. And there's also that question when you're hiring Kalen DeBoer, a guy who's been at Fresno State and before that at Indiana, who hasn't been at the big program that's had to recruit against USC and Oregon and Ohio State and those programs. How is he going to do that? How is he going to fare when, you know, he's a relatively unknown name nationally and he's recruiting against Mario Cristobal at Oregon and Lincoln Riley at USC? And really, I mean, he talked, you know, there's only so much you can say in that situation, but he talked about the relentless effort that his staff is going to need in recruiting, basically outworking competition for West Coast recruits. There's going to be more to it than that. You know, the NIL has changed quite a bit here, and UW is in a position to potentially succeed in the city of Seattle with NIL. They have other things that they can sell as a program. But really, you talked about it being, you know, a relentless effort staff-wide to be able to win those recruiting battles. And I think that was the biggest thing going into yesterday as far as the unanswered questions.
Obviously, one of the fallouts of this being Hayner entering the transfer portal, presumably try to come here to Washington. What's the outlook there, either between him and Sam Heward, or what this situation could look like here for DeBoer early on in his tenure?
Well, I mean, Jake Hayner is not currently a Washington quarterback. He is not, you know, he is in the transfer portal, and obviously it's very realistic that he could come back. He spoke with 24/7 Sports today and said, basically, he's considering his options and that Washington is a realistic landing place, but it's not a decision that he's made yet. So, you know, he's a guy who has put himself in position with the last two seasons to be coveted by a lot of big-time Power 5 programs, not just Washington. You know, he's been one of the better quarterbacks in the country. He's a gunslinger. He's a playmaker. I mean, with that comes the occasional mistake. But if he were to come to Washington, it would be a situation where you would have a huge leg up coming in, having run this offense 2 years in a row very successfully, understanding the offense, understanding the terminology, understanding exactly what they want to get done. It would be hard to imagine him coming to Washington and not being the starting quarterback in 2022, but they're not at that point yet. It could happen in the next day or two, but we're not at the point yet where we can say just because he's in the portal that he's definitely coming to UW.
Now, Mike, okay, so let's go down the road and say if he does come to UW, what ramifications do you think that potentially has with somebody like Sam Heward?
I have a hard time believing that Sam Heward leaves under many circumstances. This is a kid who's been so invested in this program, so dedicated to the program. And I know with the uneasiness of the coaching change, a lot of people ask what that means for Heward. He's just a kid, knowing him and knowing his family, that I would have a hard time seeing walk away. Now, could that happen? It certainly could happen. I would think that if you have, you know, a guy like Jake Hanner come in, maybe Dylan Morris is a situation where he might start looking elsewhere. Who knows? Obviously, you know, it would change the entire ramifications of that room. But as far as Sam, he, you know, maintained his red shirt. So he's got 4 years of eligibility remaining. Jake Hanner's got one more season to play. So realistically, you could have another year of Sam Heward being in the weight room, understanding the offense, settling in, and potentially being the starting quarterback for 3 seasons. Would he want to wait? Would he want to be patient with that? We would have to wait and see, but I don't think he's someone that would have to leave the program. But that's one of those things where we just wouldn't know until that situation plays out.
Outside of just recruiting, which is by far the biggest goal and maybe the biggest challenge, what's another one of the big challenges for the immediate part of DeBoer's career here?
Well, I think first he's got to fill out his staff here, and you know, there's a lot of possible projections in terms of who he's going to bring with him from Fresno State, particularly on the offensive side. You kind of understand what his offense is going to be, what his offense is going to look like. You can assume that his offensive coordinator, Ryan Grubb, is going to come with him. But I think the question is more where he's going to go defensively. Is he going to bring a lot of the defensive staff from Fresno State? Are they going to try to sign a big name? Are they going to try to make somewhat of a splash with the defensive coordinator hire? What's their scheme going to look like on that side of the ball? That's all the things that are currently in motion behind the scenes. So I think offensively, regardless of who's on staff, we know what they're going to look like. The defensive side is more interesting. And when they do name their staff and with the way things shake up, how many of UW's current defensive players will want to stay with the program? How many will enter the portal? Inevitably, there's going to be a shakeup there. So it'll be interesting to see who kind of comes out on the other side and what kind of scheme they're playing.
Yeah, that all will be very fascinating, Mike. You know, one of the other questions I think is out there is, why specifically did UW zero in on Kalen DeBoer? Because I know that they went through their search and everything else, but it really did seem like they zeroed in on Kalen DeBoer pretty quickly.
I think that's fair to say. I think certainly the Matt Campbell smoke was legitimate, and I think that Campbell and DeBoer were really their two guys. When you look at DeBoer, I think the things that Jen Cohen says are just about this person being a winner. The fact that, one, when you talk about Jimmy Lake and the fact that he had never been a head coach prior to coming to UW, that's something that DeBoer has done. Now, albeit it was for a long time at a smaller level where he was at his alma mater in Sioux Falls, and they won a bunch of national championships and went 6-7-3. That's something you can't discount. But then he's also done it where he very quickly turned around a program at Fresno State that was 4-8 before he got there. It's another thing is obviously the offensive side of the ball, where this is someone who's going to bring a resume that has produced offense everywhere that he's ever gone, has an innovative offensive style, which is obviously something that they've been lacking at UW in recent seasons. And, you know, he's a West Coast guy, and he's got those West Coast recruiting ties. So I think all of those things make sense. He's a young guy. He's energetic. He wants to be here in the future. He wants to build this. They've, of course, had success hiring Mountain West coaches in the past with Chris Peterson. So there's a lot of building blocks there that make a lot of sense. The question more is just, you know, can he be everything that they need him to be from a name standpoint, from a recruiting standpoint? We just don't know. You never do know with a hire, but I think a lot of those elements certainly add up in terms of what they wanted.
This seems like a pretty obvious question, but just because it was recently on your timeline, you've had Terrell Bynum tweet about staying here. He confirmed it for you. Very nice of him. You've had McMillan tweet about staying here and all of that important. But who are some of the other names that you look at and think, man, one of the big things with DeBoer is going to have to be convincing this guy to try to stay with Washington?
I mean, I think the one guy that a lot of people offensively are asking about is a Roma Dunze, who's a second-year freshman wide receiver, a super talented kid, and a guy who's really come on. Will he feel like that offensive system fits what he does? Same thing with the running backs. I mean, Cameron Davis is a guy who is a redshirt freshman who has emerged late in the season. Does he feel like this is a fit for him where they're probably not going to run the ball quite as much? but he'll certainly be more, you know, engaged in the passing game if he comes back. I think the bigger question just comes on the defensive side, like, you know, like I said, where there could be comprehensive changes, there could be schematic changes that could sort of phase some guys out. We don't know exactly how things are going to line up, and will people buy into that? With this being a reputation of these great defenses and these great secondaries, will that carry over? How many coaches will stay? I think there's just much more widespread uncertainty on the defensive side of the ball in terms of both scheme and personnel. So it's going to be interesting to see how many of those guys truly buy into what UW wants to do going forward and how many of those guys feel like they're still a fit with the program at that point.
Yeah, all of those things are going to be very, very important, and that part of it makes it so interesting. And you know, Mike, you really kind of hit it, hit the question for me. But earlier, but was there any other names besides DeBoer and Matt Campbell? And how real do you think Matt Campbell and those discussions really were between the university and the head coach?
Well, they were very real. I mean, they offered him the job. I think it was somewhere in the range of $7 million a year, and Matt Campbell was making $4 million at Iowa State. And, you know, candidly, I think he probably was their top option for obvious reasons. He's a guy that's been so respected in the industry. But I still feel like if you zero in on two guys that you really like and you get one of them, I don't know that you can see that as a failure. And I think in Kalen DeBoer, they've gotten a lot of the things that they were looking for going into the search. So the Matt Campbell thing was very legitimate, and that's a guy who has proven over and over again that the money doesn't matter to him and that he feels like he's found a cultural fit at Iowa State. So good for him. In terms of other names, I mean, we've thrown a million names at the wall in the last 2 weeks when it comes to Bob Stoops and him wearing purple ties on national television and people speculating about that, and Kalani Sitake at BYU and a bunch of other guys. I think realistically, these are the two guys, when you talk about Campbell and then obviously DeBoer, that UW sort of zeroed in on and decided really fit what they were looking for. And I don't know that anybody else was ever really, really close when it comes to a finalist in that process.
All right, there's going to be a lot of moving parts for Mike to keep covering, and he'll be doing so for the Seattle Times, so make sure you're reading his work, seattletimes.com. He is Mike Varell. Mike, thanks so much.
All right, thanks, guys.
See
thanks,
ya.
Mike.
All right, let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Teela Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
I like how I ended our interview with Mike by being like, well, Mike's got a lot to work. There's a lot of work to do. Bye.
He can have the day off. You don't know.
Yeah, you have no idea. Right. Mike's right. Like, I've got nothing to do. What are you talking about, Stacey?
Like, I'm at home right now.
I could hang out with you guys all for the rest of the segment.
What if he did say that? What if he was like, I'm good?
That'd be...
What else do you want to talk about?
Awesome.
I would just keep them. I'd be like, well, let's go. Headline rewrite.
Sure. Let's do it.
Headline number one. Within the last hour or so, NFL All Network's right. Ian Rappaport and Mike Garofalo reporting the Seahawks will bring in 36-year-old running back Adrian Peterson for a visit today. What's the real headline?
Yes. Nothing says things are just fine during a 3-8 season when you're seriously considering a 36-year-old running back. Let's run that.
Everything's back. Just fine.
Everything's fine.
Perfect.
Everything's fine.
Hey, it is fine. I mean, it's just like going back to the well, Marshawn Lynch in 2019. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot
of
fun.
You know what? Okay, listen to me. That first game he was back was pretty fun.
Hold on, Stacey. How about if in his press conference, when he goes up to the mic, Pete Carroll.
Peterson?
Like, yeah. No. Coach Carroll.
Coach Carroll. Okay.
Goes up to the mic and he's like, you can ask me. Just like what he did with Danny and Gallant. Go ahead and ask me. Come on.
Guys, what was it that happened?
Just ask me about Adrian Peterson. Come on.
They were coming off of a bad loss when he entered into that conversation and told Danny.
It was the Arizona Cardinals.
That's
what it was. They got smoked at home.
And it was one of those things where you were like, he can tell he wants to talk about anything else. So it was like, hey, do you want to ask me about Marshawn Lynch?
Yeah.
We're signing him.
Yeah. We're trying to get any of the headlines away from that game. Oh, man.
Hey, look, a distraction.
It's the equivalent of when you do something and your parents, like, start to approach right. you about it, and you're like, you know, my sister, did you guys know that she crashed your car?
Yeah, she snuck out of the house the other night. Yeah. That's crazy.
It's wild. Weird.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, former Husky, and now former Fresno State mm-hmm. quarterback Jake Haener reportedly interested in transferring back to Washington. What's the real headline?
Breaking news. Our very own Jake Heaps reportedly trying to re-enroll in college just to take back his record for most transfers.
Yeah, that's mine.
Cannot let another Jake
pause
have that.
Wow.
Back off. Jake's like, I just got to get one more.
I hate you.
What's going on with Miami? Can I go back?
Stacy, it sounds like your sickness is coming back. It just really sounds like
it is. It is coming back.
So you might need to go home for the rest of the day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can go now.
Well, no.
You can go back. I'll take over from here.
I get that you had so much fun with you and Curtis.
We did. We actually had a great time.
I know. It made me really upset. I couldn't wait to get back to break it up. The bromance
was
too much.
We know.
I didn't like it. You guys know that I hate not being included.
I do. And I also hate that Jake Haner is going to tie my record for transfers.
Very upsetting.
I'm very competitive.
I know.
So this
Man,
one,
Jake, think of all the transfers you could have done with the extra year of eligibility in COVID. Oh, man.
And no restrictions. You don't have to sit out.
You could have hit in three more.
I could have. You really could have. Wow. That would have been something. I mean, if you think about it, it was impressive. I was semi-West Coast, Utah. Then you go to Midwest, which is, in Kansas.
You went further east every time.
And then all the way to Miami, Florida.
My favorite
You're
thing...
You're going to go to college in, Greenland next.
Yeah.
Right? Is there someone in Europe I could go?
Favorite thing about Jake is how often people try to make fun of him and, he genuinely doesn't care. But also how much you lean into it. You know what I mean? We talk about Miami, we're like, let's go Canes.
Yeah.
Rock shock, baby. Every school. Cougars.
See, here's the thing. You're laughing. I don't get the joke.
No, that's what I'm saying, you guys. Jake talks about all these schools. He talks about all these schools. That's my school?
Yes, because I went there.
I know. I love it. It's great.
Whatever.
Headline, we rise.
I double majored at UW.
I did. That's hard. Harder than transferring.
Actually, it was very, very hard.
I'm sure
Charlie Weiss blocked me.
Did
everything he could to stop me from transferring from Kansas, mostly out of spite. And let me tell you, it was not easy at all.
No,
not
Charlie
easy.
Charlie Weiss,
boy. Headline number three.
Why'd you have the energy to do that?
Jeff Passan of ESPN reporting that players have been told
somebody.
The collective bargaining negotiations are done for the day. We're only at noon Pacific time. What is the real headline?
Mariners front office collectively says silent prayer after getting a deal done before today's deadline. Now, that's the first headline of, thank goodness the Mariners actually did one. But stemming from Jeff Passan's report, I think the headline needs to be the lockout feels assured at this point.
Yeah.
This is done. This is happening.
It would make this city come alive. I mean, the Robbie Ray deal already has everybody fired up. I mean, Curtis and I, we were able to experience that together when the news came in, Stacy. It was magical.
Oh, man.
And, it's really such a bummer. You
we
weren't
try
here
to recapture that.
That
magic every single time we
and
crack
I'm stopping
the mic.
You
yeah.
from doing it.
And, it would be great to be able to share that with you today since you missed out on the first time. But I don't know. Maybe us as Mariners fans, maybe we did this wrong. I mean, maybe we should have done a day fast together to make this happen. A prayer.
Manifest.
I mean, we whatever we got to do to help make this come together for the Mariners. I mean, we got to figure out how we can do our part. But I mean, in all seriousness, adding an impact bat before the lockout, I think would be huge. It would solidify everything, and it would make even I believe the Mariners less nervous about what things are going to be like and the moves that they will make afterwards. Not that they'll be done. But once the lockout ends, you'll be more secure, you'll be more solidified, and you potentially won't have to deal with as many suitors that would come if the salary floor was raised to somewhere between 90 and 100 million, which is the talk of what could potentially happen. And all the teams that are trying to tank, now they got to spend money. Now the market becomes red hot. Now you've got more competitors.
Need I remind you, before we even get to that, Jerry DePoto told Mike Salk this morning there is still a shot a deal gets done today.
Oh, no, we can absolutely do deals. And we're still approaching this as if, today is another business day. And, we've got our hands in a couple of different trade talks, and we're still engaged with a few free agents. And, I can't say one way or the other whether we will get anything done, but I also wouldn't say it's impossible.
All right. It's a classic.
That's such a great.
As Carol would say, in classic fashion.
Classic DePoto fashion.
Look, I'm not saying that anything will get done, but I'm not saying anything won't get done.
I mean, we could sign somebody, theoretically. We could not sign somebody.
How torturous
I mean,
is it going to be if we're sitting here in February and Chris Bryant and Trevor Story are still unsigned and the CBA might get signed in the next couple of days? Like, we're going to have months of talk like, they're sitting out there unsigned. Go get them.
Now, question.
I'm going to be a nervous wreck is what I'm going to tell you. Shannon, when she came on to talk about the Robbie Ray thing, since you weren't here, I'll fill you in
I didn't listen to you guys.
Shannon was saying how happy she was for me because she knew my anxiety level about them making any splash move.
Thoughtful.
It is very thoughtful. But that will come right back around.
No, yeah, he needs constant
if the lockout, exactly.
Yeah.
And I do not do well without that.
No. It's have you guys ever been around a whippet? You know?
No, I can't say I have.
Whippets are like little tiny greyhounds. Uh-huh. They're really shaky. You need to walk them all the time. They have a lot of nervous energy. That's Jake when it comes to anything, but sports news especially. It's just, the Robbie Ray signing. Okay, great. Oh, my God, I have all this nervous energy coming back because now it's been 24 hours. What else are they going to do?
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Yeah. We'll take you for a walk or something during this break, and we'll see if there's any more news.
Okay. All right. That's enough.
All right. The return of a starter in the NFC West and more injury updates from around the league. NFL headlines coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps
Joe
and
from the 360.
Ross.
That's not your real name.
36 Joe.
If Jake's a whippet, I said Jake has a lot of nervous energy when it comes to waiting on sports news, where I'll go, this just in. He'll just sit up. What? What's what? If Jake's a whippet, then Stacy is a chihuahua, rude, and Curtis is a golden doodle.
Well, I mean,
Curtis is America's sweetheart.
Yeah, I mean, Curtis is all the rage right now, which is exactly what a golden doodle is. And
I take offense to the fact that I'd be a chihuahua.
Well, that is inaccurate. I think you'd be more like a Pomeranian or a pom-pom, which is a miniature Pomeranian.
I don't think that. I think that's all unfair. I think I would be
very excitable.
I think I could be a golden retriever.
Runs around, yelling everywhere.
No.
Yeah, it's a perfect description.
I don't yell, and I definitely don't run.
You don't yell? In our prep room, we consistently get told to shut the door every morning.
Literally.
Because of
every single
specifically
day.
One person's voice.
You guys, I am told, I don't mean to yell. I genuinely don't think that I can hear very well. I'm not kidding. When I talk at this volume, Curtis, can you hear my voice?
Stacy, stop.
You can hear my voice.
I can hear it.
I can't hear my own voice.
That's not true. It is not true. On top of that, you're a hypochondriac as well. So Curtis and I had no idea whether you were actually sick or not, or whether you were just dreaming up these symptoms. We have no idea. We have no idea. It's a mystery.
The headlines. Let's start in Seattle. You heard it in our own headlines, but I'll get to it in NFL headlines. The Seattle Seahawks are bringing running back Adrian Peterson in for a visit. That's from NFL Network's Mike Garofolo. He's 36 years old, recorded 27 carries for 82 yards and a touchdown in three games with the Titans. He was released at the end of November.
I think that when you talk about Adrian Peterson, it is a sign of the times that you're really struggling. Yeah. I mean, you're 3-8. And look, the Marshawn Lynch situation, even back in 2019, was a little bit better than this. And it's not to say that that wasn't a very comparable situation and decision. But, I mean, it just really is the group is desperate to figure out an answer. And they need help. And Adrian Peterson's available. And you know, I mean, a year ago, I mean, just talk about it, a year ago when he had his duties with the Detroit Lions, he didn't play bad. And 3.9 yards per carry, did a pretty good job, over 600 yards on the ground. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what he's going to be able to do with this offensive line here in Seattle, but, I mean, shoot, let's find out. Let's do it.
The 425 says Tracy is definitely a chihuahua. Oh, God. Next headline here. Kyler Murray, as expected, returns to practice, as does DeAndre Hopkins. The two of them missed the last game, and obviously we expected that both would be gone. It was a game against the Seahawks, which the Cardinals, honestly, rightfully so, probably saw as a winnable game without those two. They were also heading into a bye week after that game. Figure you get two more weeks of rest for Murray and Hopkins, now both back at practice for the Cardinals. I got to say, you guys, with the way that the Rams have been struggling, with Matthew Stafford struggling and throwing a couple picks,
yeah,
it's hard not to see the Cardinals running away with this thing.
Yeah, I they will. I mean, there might be one more loss on their schedule. I don't see it coming from the Rams. It could maybe come from the Colts. I mean, the Colts have been playing pretty good football as of late. If they rely on Jonathan Taylor or not on Carson Wentz to try to win a game. But the Colts and the Cowboys, they have them. And then who knows, maybe the Seahawks last game of the year, they could play spoiler. You never know. But I really think that they are on a run. They are a special team right now. They have depth. I mean, the fact that they've been able to continue to keep winning with Colt McCoy as their quarterback and being down Chase Edmonds and being without DeAndre Hopkins, being without J.J. Watt. I mean, Stacey, you know, that is so dang impressive. That is really impressive.
Nick Sirianni, this from NFL.com, is hopeful that Jalen Hurts, who has an ankle injury right now, will start versus the Jets. What have you made so far of Hurts in Philadelphia? Do you think he's their answer? And not only that, but just what do you make of his play this year?
I mean, honestly, I think they could do worse. I mean, and I know that's not necessarily the most ringing endorsement.
No, but it's a very fair answer.
But it's fair, and I don't think that he is part of these serious issues that are there with Philly. I mean, he's been an absolute bright spot. And if you look at his stats compared to Lamar Jackson at this stage of the game, however many starts he's had, 17 starts now, I mean, they're right in line with what Lamar Jackson has done. Stacey, through the air and on the ground. So we all know the craze that went around Lamar Jackson, and at one point he won MVP. The difference is Lamar Jackson played on a better team. Jalen Hurts, he's with Philly. So I really think you've got a good thing going there with Jalen Hurts, and you can build around him and his strengths and his skill sets, and that's exactly what the Eagles should be doing.
Now, this might surprise you. ESPN has a list of how good every single NFL coach is on fourth down calls. Where do you think Pete Carroll landed on this list? 1 through 32.
33.
I will say a couple are tied, so it's not 1 through 32 exactly. But no, Curtis, you're wrong. Jake, do you have a guess?
Well, he said 33. I'm going to say 31.
No, you're also wrong. Pete Carroll tied for 13th, according to ESPN.
What?
They looked at years 2017 through 21. I'll read you what they said. This from Brady Henderson, friend of the show, Brady Henderson. Win probability sacrificed on fourth down errors, ranks 27th, blah, blah, blah. So here's what Brady sums it up as. In their 2019 regular season finale, the Seahawks trailed San Francisco 26-21 with 12 seconds left facing fourth down. Blah, blah, blah. They are looking at like a touchdown, a fourth down decision there. A touchdown would have given the Seahawks a victory in the NFC West Championship, but their loss meant opening the playoffs at Philadelphia as a wild card team. So they're saying, like, look, they have some mistakes on fourth down, and he can be conservative on fourth down, certainly, but overwhelmingly when he goes for fourth down, he doesn't make horrific mistakes. At least not as many as other coaches.
Okay.
This is what ESPN said, Jake. I'm the messenger.
I love Brady Henderson, and by the stats, okay. But in reality, I don't think that's true at all. Not at all. I mean, you look at this last fourth down situation that they were in at the end of the game. Washington doesn't have a field goal kicker, Stacey. No, a field goal kicker. And you run the ball on third down. Why? Because one, you think he can get it, and two, you should be in four down territory in that situation. Nope.
All right. Well, anyways,
a lot of no calls on fourth down. A lot of deciding not to go for it for me to feel good about that ranking.
This list was from ESPN Stats and Information Research looking at the number of fourth down errors. They say they've plummeted in each of the past four seasons, so the league at least getting better at not making those errors thanks to the increased application of analytics, basically changing the game on fourth down and changing the way that decisions are made. But they looked at all the fourth down calls made under the current head coach with his current team. time frame for every single coach was limited to 2017 to 21. They looked at the total win probability sacrificed through the errors, like did a fourth down error cost them the game or not. They looked at also whether or not the difference in their fourth down conversion rate versus the actual rates. It sounds very convoluted, and I'm making it sound more convoluted than it is, but it's just a very interesting list looking at when coaches do go for it, the success of the calls that they've made. So
then that means they should do it more often, right?
I think in
general... In theory, is that what that's saying?
I think in general, every single team should go for it more often on third and fourth down.
Okay.
There was this really interesting article. I want to say The Ringer. It might have been 538, looking at the discrepancy between how often teams, in theory, should go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the probability of converting, you know, fourth and two or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say go for it on third down?
Yeah,
go for
you
it
did.
On, always go for
I,
it on
I,
third
I
down.
I didn't want to say anything because I was wondering where you were going to go with it, but I'm like,
sorry,
I'm pretty sure everybody goes for it on third
always
down.
Always go for it on third down, for sure. For sure. But looking at the basically, they created a measurement. I'll find it. But it was like if you're something like, you know, outside of your own 40-yard line facing like five or less, you should almost always go for it. Something like that. I'm messing it up.
Okay.
I need to go look at it.
Yeah.
And just saying the probability of it would make it to where coaches should go for it far more often than they do. But the traditional mindset of NFL coaches is to be far more conservative than that. And so it's like slowly
right.
catching up to that. So a coach that goes for it, you know, even some of the time is seen as being like super bold and daring.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like a Brandon Staley kind of guy.
And I do believe that that is the right mix of it, though. Like, I think that you have to equate the fact that field position battle is real. And you have to figure out the risk-reward costs of what your offense is, what it isn't, and also what kind of defense you have. So that part of it, of the game, the analytics don't, I don't think, really take into account a lot of those things. I do believe that coaches should be looking into that more and not be as afraid when you're in plus territory.
All right. One of my favorite segments, Hype Train, is coming your way next. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Let's head down to the station for Hype Train. All right, you guys know how this works. I tell you a trend, an idea, a take in sports. You either board the train, meaning you're buying into it, or you let it go on by, in which case it's just hype. It's a hype train. So let's get to the first one here. First train in, this one about Washington. Jake Haener has entered the transfer portal. Now, he hasn't yet gone to Washington. We just spoke with Mike Varell of the Seattle Times, who said, well, slow your horses. Hold
mm-hmm.
your horses and slow them. Slow and hold them.
Sure.
Because
okay.
he
yeah.
isn't with Washington yet. He's keeping his options open. But here's the hype train. Jake Haener will be Washington's starting quarterback to open the 2022 season.
Curtis?
No, don't you dare. Do not.
Sound the train!
No!
Yes, Jake Haener will be coming to the University of Washington. I mean, it's obvious. Where else would Jake Haener go that he thinks that he could fit into that would be better?
I don't know.
A better situation than for him to return back to Washington. Maybe there is a roster that he looks at and says, hey, this group's more talented. I think I could go there and I can have a ton of success. But why on earth would you not go back to Washington where you know the system, you know the quarterback, you know the way that your head coach operates, and you can be a leader from day one when you show up? And that is honestly what I think Jake Haener is going to do.
Curtis.
Let's go to the tape, shall we? Here's Kalen DeBoer yesterday when asked about the possibility of Jake Haener entering the transfer portal again. This was his answer.
First of all, Jake's an amazing person, amazing player. And, man, what a special time we've had together. And in the world of the transfer portal and all that, I think it's pretty clear he'd be able to be eligible. You know, I want what's best for Jake. I really do. I want what's best for Jake. And you know, being a mentor, that will never end as far as what my hopes are for him. And so, you know, that's really up to him as far as deciding what's next for him. And I mean, he's got other directions he can take his career as well.
The fact that he knew he would be immediately eligible next season when no one knows when any of these kids are immediately eligible. That says to me that DeBoer has already had those conversations with Jake Haener. I'm hopping on this train. I don't think I've ever hopped on a train faster.
This train
than this
came
one.
Into this. Station
I haven't
with
either.
Rogers
this
on
this
it.
Is about as obvious as it gets.
So what happens with Sam?
Great question. I mean look, Mike Ferrell, you know, was on with us earlier, and if you missed that, you could download our show on 710sports.com, or you can get the Jake and Stacey podcast wherever you get your podcast.
Jake.
But when it comes to what Mike Ferrell said, he said, look, Sam Heward has been very dedicated to the program, very committed to the Dogs, and he would assume that he would stick around, and Sam Heward would then become the quarterback as a sophomore, as a redshirt sophomore. That could very well be the case, but I would not sit there and be as comfortable about that comment. I don't think that it is as simple as that, and I think that that standing is a little bit more on shaky ground.
All right, next train in. This one, we're going Mariners here. We still got a couple more hours before the CBA expires and MLB enters into an expected lockout that could last a couple months. So here's the hype train. Tell me if you're boarding. Jake, we'll start with you. The Mariners will add one more impact player before tonight's 9 p.m. Pacific time deadline.
No, I'm not going to get on this train. I'm really sad about it, Stacey, because I wore my Mariners gear.
You did, and a Mariners hat. Is that a Mariners hoodie underneath it?
In anticipation, no, it's not a Mariners hoodie.
Okay. Couldn't afford it.
And I'm really sad about it because I do think it's really important. I think it is important that they take advantage of the opportunity they have right now, knowing who their competition is at the current moment and what the conversations are like with the players. All of that can change after the lockout. It's not guaranteed. Just because you were, you know, in on it just beforehand doesn't mean you're going to be, you know, one or two on their board when the lockout, you know, ends and finishes. So strike while the iron's hot. And that would be my advice to the Mariners, but I just don't believe that they'll be able to make it happen, and it might be on the fault of Chris Bryant and Trevor Story. Who knows?
The Mariners will add one more impact player before tonight's deadline at 9 p.m. Pacific time. Jake says no, he is not boarding that train. Curtis, are you boarding that train?
Boy. I mean, there really hasn't been a ton of news outside of the Buster Olney tweet this morning saying the Mariners last night were linked to a third baseman, an unnamed third baseman. That could have been anybody.
Yeah.
And it's awfully quiet right now. But I think they do get it done.
Wow.
I'm hopping on the train.
Really?
And I'll tell you who I think it's going to be.
Oh, wow. You're even going for the name.
I think it's going to be Trevor Story.
Shut your mouth. No.
Curtis, she didn't really
know. Curtis, no, you don't have to shut your mouth.
It's going
to
be Trevor Story. And you know what's going to be great? In the 2022 season,
stop.
He's going to write a kid's book called Trevor's Story, and they're going to hand it out at T-Mobile Park. Will is going to get a copy. Jackson, Bodie, and River, they're going to get a copy. I've got it already planned out.
Let me get one final train in here. One last one entering the station. Heading back to college football for this one.
Oh, he's going to run again.
Here's the hype train. Tell me if you're boarding. The Cougs made their interim head coach permanent head coach. So here is the hype train. Making Jake Dickert the permanent head coach of Wazoo football was the right call.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wazoo head coach what?
Oh, God. Jake, making Jake Dickert the permanent head coach of Wazoo football was the right call. Stop laughing at Curtis's jokes.
Stacey only wants you to laugh at her jokes.
Hello?
You know, Stacey, how you were talking about both things can be true?
No.
Yes, I'm going to apply that. I'm going to apply that to this situation because I am not getting on this train. Although I am a big fan of Jake Dickert, and I am really impressed by the job that he did with this team this season, I can believe that he did an amazing job as an interim head coach, and then also on the flip side believe that hiring him full-time and making him the head coach for the Cougs 5 years from now is not going to bring the fruit that you're hoping it will. And so I think that he's a bright guy, a smart guy, obviously a good leader. But in terms of recruiting, in terms of overall what the program becomes, I don't know if Jake Dickert is the guy that they did make the right call. So,
all right, how did the Seahawks get to 3-8? Is it bad luck, bad injuries, bad drafting, or bad quarterback play? It's coming up next.